Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona. Friday, July 14. Hello again, Orion Samuelson here at the desk in Scottsdale, Arizona. Back here for another check on the leg bypass surgery that I had earlier this spring. But checking in on the markets regardless. And Max Armstrong will be joining us a little bit later to talk markets with Mark Feit of the International Agribusiness Group. But as usual, a lot going on in the marketplace this week, both on Wall Street and in the commodity world. So as we always do, let's begin the coverage on Wall Street. The Dow Industrial Average today ended 84 points higher at 21,637. The S&P 500 gained 11 points today to close at 2459, and the NASDAQ Composite gained 38 points today to close at 6312. Meanwhile, VIX, the volatility index at the CBOE, down a little more than a third of a point at 951, and that's its lowest level of the volatility index for years, as things seem to be quieting down in the marketplace. But today, the Dow and the S&P 500 hit record highs after weak economic data maybe dulled the prospects of more interest rate hikes this year. At least some traders are talking that as we end the week. A decline in financial shares limited the day's gains, even though J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and other big banks delivered quarterly results that beat expectations on Wall Street. Data showed consumer prices were unchanged in June. Retail sales fell for a second straight month, pointing to tame inflation and subdued expectations of strong economic growth in the second quarter. Earlier this week, the market moved higher after Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen said future rate hikes could be gradual in the face of persistently low inflation. And so for the week, the Dow was up 1.1%, the S&P 500 up 1.4%, and the NASDAQ rose 2.6%. And that was the biggest percentage gain for a week so far this year. The volatility index, as I mentioned, at its lowest level since December of 1993. Now, four of the largest lenders beat analysts' quarterly profit expectations by raising loan prices without paying much more for deposits. But analysts said investors had wanted to see even better results and maybe hear a rosier outlook from executives. J.P. Morgan Chase down 0.9%, shares of Citigroup down 0.4%, and Wells Fargo still trying to recover from that sales merchandising scandal down 1.1%. Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley all due to report results next week. Analysts now are estimating the second quarter earnings for the S&P 500 companies will have gone up 8.1% from a year earlier, and first quarter earnings posted their best performance since 2011. Amazon shares up 0.1%. The company has raised flags in Washington with a Democratic lawmaker calling for a hearing on how Amazon's plans to buy Whole Foods Market will potentially impact consumers. The deal, announced in June, marks the biggest acquisition ever for the world's largest online retailer. Turning to some of the other activities in the marketplace, oil. Today up 1%, posted a weekly gain of 5%, as U.S. crude producers added only two oil rigs in the latest week and on signs of increased Chinese demand, but trading was volatile as global supply remained strong. Brent crude futures, that's the international benchmark for oil, today up 49 cents to $48.91 a barrel. And U.S. crude futures settled up 46 cents, or about 1%, at $46.54 a barrel. U.S. crude rose more than 5.2% for the week, while Brent rose more than 4.7% for the week. Now, let's look ahead to next week, because we are smack dab into the earnings report second quarter season. So let's look at what we get. Well, on Thursday, Microsoft reports its fourth quarter earnings, and the world's largest software company expected to report its fifth straight increase in quarterly profit. Bank of America will report second quarter earnings on Tuesday, and the bank, which has already prepared analysts and investors for weaker trading results, likely to field questions about its progress on cost savings plans and how it will grow revenue in a low interest rate environment. Goldman Sachs Group also reports results for the second quarter on the same day, and Morgan Stanley will report results for the second quarter on Wednesday. Housing and regional manufacturing surveys will dominate an otherwise quiet data week. Tuesday, the Labor Department will report that import prices fell 0.2% in June after dropping 0.3% in May. Data from the Commerce Department due out Wednesday probably show that housing starts increased to a 1,150,000 unit rate in June. That would be up from a 1,090,000 unit pace in May. Building permits are forecast rising to a 1,200,000 unit rate, and that would be up from the most recent numbers. Visa expected to report an increase in quarterly revenue and profit on Thursday as it continues to benefit from consumers spending more using the network. Consumer spending in the quarter was boosted by an improving labor market, and Visa, which generates revenue by facilitating credit and debit card transactions, has also been seeing positive impacts from Europe and from India. Johnson & Johnson kicks off big pharma earnings on Tuesday. That's a few days after Senate Republican leaders unveiled a revised plan to dismantle Obamacare. But investors will be looking for more updates on the slowing growth of the diversified healthcare company's top-selling drugs. And so they will also be interested in the early integration details of the company's recently completed $30 billion acquisition of Actelion. United Health Group will report its second quarter earnings before the markets open on Tuesday. Aero parts maker Honeywell International expected to report higher second quarter profit on Friday. And Lockheed Martin Corporation, that's the company that makes the F-35 fighter jets, expected to report higher revenue for the second quarter on Tuesday, helped by rising sales of its fighters. Meanwhile, Textron, the Cessna jet maker, expected to report a decline in its quarterly profit on Wednesday due to weak demand for business jets in the market. IBM, once a bellwether, is it still? Not sure, but it's expected to report a decline in revenue in the second quarter on Tuesday. And analysts also become increasingly concerned about the competition surrounding IBM's Watson artificial intelligence platform. American Express likely to post flat earnings when it reports second quarter results on Wednesday. Card member spending continues to grow as the company acquires new users globally, and higher marketing spends, on the other hand, continue to weigh down profits. Qualcomm reports third quarter results on Wednesday. Schlumberger, the number one oil field services provider, expected to report a smaller second quarter profit on Friday. And as I said, it's going to be a busy week in the earnings report season. Abbott Laboratories will be reporting. Union Pacific Corporation, the largest U.S. railroad, will be recording. E-commerce platform eBay expected to report an increase in second quarter revenue on Thursday. And then we get some reports from Canada and also from Mexico. Dish Network expected to report a drop in second quarter profit on Thursday. And Harley-Davidson expected to report lower revenue and profit for the second quarter on Tuesday. That's hurt by slowing demand for its bikes in the United States, which is its biggest market. So all in all, you'll have plenty of reports to keep an eye on in the coming week on Wall Street as we get earnings reports and some of the government reports. Well, what about agricultural commodities? Max Armstrong standing by with his guest this week to talk about the agricultural market community when we continue on the market sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Joining us this weekend, Mark Feit from the International Agribusiness Group. And I was looking over crop conditions, and I noted the eastern Corn Belt states, Indiana and Ohio, they're about 50% good to excellent on corn and beans. You were out on a crop tour earlier in the season looking at some of those fields. They looked pretty grim at the time. I remember seeing some of your comments, especially the northeast part of Indiana. Do you think that crop has improved some in the eastern Corn Belt as we've come along?
No, it really hasn't. I actually, on my way over to Naperville for the meeting, traveled that same area again the last 2 days, and it has not improved. If anything, it's probably gotten worse. That crop's in real trouble, and I don't see it that is going to improve in much of Indiana and even parts of southern Illinois.
So is 50% good to excellent being charitable for that crop? Is that a little better than you think it might be?
It may be, but 50% is already a pretty poor rating. So it's probably fair, and I think yields are going to be challenged to beat 2015 numbers.
That percentage that isn't good to excellent, as I recall, it was heavily fair. I mean, it wasn't really poor or very poor to a large percentage. Are we just splitting hairs here, I guess, a little bit?
Probably splitting hairs, but there aren't that many fields that are in real poor condition. It's just a lot of very average to medium quality crops is what I would call it. Beans are really struggling. They're small, waterlogged, yellow. They could be okay if we just treated them better the next 30 days.
It can make a big difference, can't it? Weather going forward. USDA came up with a pretty bearish assessment this week, or that was the perception anyway, as people looked across the numbers. Was there anything friendly in what the USDA did in its supply-demand report?
Well, I think there was, but the surprise, I guess I'm surprised that those were surprised by those numbers. We knew by their methodology the yields would be the same as they had in May and also in June, that they wouldn't change those yields and they would have a pretty big carryout with higher corn acres. Going forward, we think you have to adjust the U.S. crop pretty significantly. We're down, I think, 400 to 500 million bushels from where they are. And the Chinese crop is smaller. They've got better demand built into the soybean balance sheet. So I don't know if that can make you bullish, but it certainly makes you less bearish.
USDA has had a tendency to underestimate soybean demand, have they not, year after year?
Absolutely. And this year's no exception. They increased Chinese imports by 2 million tons yesterday and then bumped next year's a new crop imports by another million tons. So it's been a persistent problem.
As far as corn is concerned, taking a look at what they did there, I heard some commentary. Some analyst was saying something to the effect that if you saw that yield trimmed, by just two bushels to the acre. It would pretty much wipe out what USDA did in terms of the increased carryout for corn.
Yeah, and I think two bushels would be easy. Our guess is we're in the 165 to 167 bushel average on this crop. I think we're trading something 167 to 168, and that's a 1.8 to 1.9 carryout. So it gets a little more interesting. So I think the market's still got some we've still got some room to move. The yield is still open-ended. We don't know whether this ridge is coming back or not.
The Dakotas, as far as that crop is concerned, are you of the opinion USDA is fully accounting for what has happened there in that part of the world?
No, I don't think so. I think Dakotas and Nebraska as well, they're experiencing 100-degree heat during pollination here, and it's a real issue, and I don't think you really see that until harvest.
The Dakotas account for how much of the crop production? When you take a look at corn and beans, if you put them together, is it about 14-15%?
Yeah, it's that on a good year. So it's still a pretty small percent. But if you add Nebraska.
And Nebraska is a significant corn growing state. What, number three?
That's right. And maybe even a small piece of Iowa. So I think we've had some impact. We've trimmed the edges, both edges of this crop.
I did have a grower in northern Iowa tell me a few days ago that his crop wasn't looking that great. He was in the extreme northern part of the state along the Minnesota state line. And when you went over into Minnesota, it did look very good. But even there, an agronomist with a cooperative said to me, this is not going to be the 2015 crop, certainly that the 2016, I should say, that they had in that part of the world, that it's an okay crop. It's not exceptional.
Yeah, and I think that's the hard part of this, of guessing the crop. These average crops are the hardest. When you have a big crop, you can just peg a record. When you have a 2012 crop, you can take a big chunk off and peg the yield pretty easy there. But the in-between, that's really hard.
What did the USDA say about global supplies? Did they confirm that there's still a lot out there because of what happened in South America this spring?
Yeah, I think they're off on the world corn carryout by 25 million tons. We're going to end the 16-17 crop with about 227 million tons world carryout. The USDA has new crop 17-18 at 200. We think they're about 25 million tons too high. I don't think they've trimmed the Chinese crop the way we think it has been due to weather this summer.
And which crop is that?
That's the Chinese corn crop. And we think that's about 10 million tons below where the gov is today. We think they're about 15 million tons too high on the U.S. crop. So now we're comparing 175 million ton carryout versus 225. It's a significant decline.
The wheat that's available to the world, there doesn't seem to be much of a shortage, but did USDA overestimate wheat supplies? I heard some comment about that maybe taking a look even at Australia and Canada and the Soviet Union, their numbers are a little high.
Well, I think they may be a little high on Russia, but overall, I think the crop is – there's still plenty of common wheat. It's still the high-protein wheat that really doesn't – there's no substitute for that, so you can't connect that to soft red or much of the common wheat in the world. So supplies in wheat are still ample, and I think the wheat market's gotten itself a little overdone.
There's nothing to get too excited about given how much hard red winter wheat and soft red winter wheat we have.
That's correct. There's still enough of the hard winter, and the spring wheat is the only problem here. We're still in allocation mode. I'm not sure the market's done with spring wheat, but you can't take soft red and substitute and make high protein wheat with it. So if you need high protein, you have to have spring wheat.
Back on the corn and bean market for a moment. While there really wasn't anything in this report seemingly to get bulls terribly excited, there could still be some action in this market this summer, correct?
Yeah. If the ridge doesn't come back, we've probably seen the highs.
We hit the top then before this USDA report, unless this hot, dry air mass comes back in, you're saying.
I think that's right. And I don't think the report was the biggest part of this move. I think the loss in the market the last few days has been a change in the models. We've gone from models being very warm and dry to not so warm and much more rain in the second week of the forecast.
Thank you, sir, for your visit and your expertise. We sure do appreciate it. Mark Feit from International Agribusiness Group. Come back and see us.
Thanks, Max. I will.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Before we look at some of the market activity in the world of agriculture this week, let's take a look at a couple of stories that, well, are bothering a lot of people. We're hearing more and more about poultry flocks in the backyard in towns and cities across the country. But now there is a concern put forth by the Center for Disease Control as it investigates a 10 multi-state outbreak of human salmonella infections linked to live poultry in backyard flocks. The Center for Disease Control said an additional 418 sick people have been reported since their last update on the 1st of June. That brings the total number of illnesses now to 790. Nationwide, no deaths have been reported for the human salmonella infections, but outbreaks are expected to continue for the next several months. The Center for Disease Control says there have been 103 more hospitalizations related to multi-state human salmonella outbreak, bringing the total to 174, but again, I repeat, no deaths reported. And while we're getting reports on the happening, we're not getting much in the way of information on what to do to avoid it or to control it. So something to watch for if you have a barn or a backyard poultry flock in your community. Keep an eye on it, and you may want to check with veterinarians. Now, the other sad story this week. State officials ordered the slaughter of nearly 300 hogs at a county fair in Ohio after at least two animals tested positive for swine flu. The report comes from a Clinton County, Ohio fair representative who confirmed Thursday the hogs had tested positive and would be slaughtered. An Ohio Department of Agriculture spokesman said Friday that the fair will disinfect the barn and its contents to stop any spread of the virus. Department spokesman Mark Bruce says any equipment inside the barn will be released to owners after disinfection. Hog breeder Joey Johnson says it's been difficult, especially for children whose animals will be slaughtered. The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says when humans are infected with swine flu, it's typically transmitted by prolonged exposure to hogs at agricultural fairs. So let's hope and pray that this is a one-time event in one location as we move heavily into the state fair and the county fair season. We've been watching the wheat market, and boy, has it suddenly gone on a roller coaster. We've been watching it go up sharply during the drought in the Dakotas and Montana. But with a little better weather, we are seeing some profit-taking in that wheat market. And then on Wednesday, in its monthly supply-demand report, the Department of Agriculture said that production of spring wheat will fall to a 15-year low. But in that report, USDA also raised its corn and soybean production forecast. That despite a late start to planting and colder than usual temperatures during the spring that did raise concerns about crop health. The government in its monthly report put the harvest of spring wheat other than Durham at 423 million bushels on a yield of 40.3 bushels per year. USDA raised its estimate of the winter wheat crop to 1,279,000,000 bushels. That came in near the high end of a range of forecasts from analysts. And the government forecast total wheat production of 1,760,000,000 bushels. That would be the smallest since the harvest back in 2002. Now, for soybeans, USDA, surprisingly to some traders, raised its 2017-18 harvest outlook to 4,260,000,000 bushels, the high end of market forecasts, and 5 million higher than its June estimate. They left soybean yields, however, unchanged at 48 bushels per acre. The 2017-18 corn crop put at 14,255,000,000 bushels above the high end of forecast, and the corn yield outlook unchanged at 170.7 bushels per acre. That was the high end of market expectations. We're getting more competition for the U.S. corn crop from countries like Brazil and Argentina, harvesting big crops this year and coming into the market to compete with American corn, particularly in China and in some of our other major importers. Speaking of China, though, a delegation of commodity importers from China, which is the world's top soybean buyer, did sign agreements on Thursday to buy 12,530,000,000 tons of the U.S. crop in the second largest deal between the two countries, according to the U.S. Soybean Export Council. Traders and analysts, though, said the agreements provided little insight for the market because final prices and shipment dates were not specified. One trader said they are meaningless. It's window dressing. Also, the Chinese buyers agreed to buy 371 metric tons of U.S. beef and pork, so the total value of the combined soybean and meat deals was about $5,012,000,000. And that beef deal comes just weeks after China reopened its market to U.S. supplies after a 14-year ban because of mad cow disease. Former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, who is now the U.S. ambassador to China, said that serving U.S. beef in the embassy in Beijing was a major goal of his. And so we're getting some of that U.S. fresh beef back into the country of China. As I said, we're into the county fair season, we're into the state fair season, and we're also into the outdoor show season. And we've got a ton of them coming up. A show that this weekend is one that's held annually in Penfield, Illinois. And that's an antique farm equipment show. There'll be the Half Century of Progress show in Rantoul, August 24th through the 27th. The Farm Progress show in Decatur, Illinois, August 29th through 31. The Old Threshers Reunion in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, August 31 to September 4. Central States Threshermen's Reunion in Pontiac, Illinois, August 31 to September 4. And Husker Harvest Days in Grand Island, September 12 through 14. And the Ohio Farm Science Review at London, Ohio, September 19 through 21. You talk about a busy time, and if there's antique tractor shows anywhere, you'll more than likely find Max Armstrong. He loves them and he gets to all of them. Well, that's about our time for this week here on This Week in the World of Agriculture and Wall Street. We will be looking ahead now to the first real crop report of the season. That comes up in early August. Until that time, projections of production based mainly on anticipation of planted acres. But for the August report, we'll get the first report on production for the year based on real numbers of bushels per acre yield and also the weather and planted acres. So we look forward to that. We look forward to seeing some of you at the county or state fairs this summer. And we thank you for joining us here every week on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.